South Dakota Public Broadcasting, sdpb.org.
All right, we will call the Senate Local Government Committee to order. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gillespie?
Here.
Klocek? Miles?
Here.
Schmidt?
Here.
Keeson?
Here.
Bradford?
Here.
Gant?
Here.
The chair is a quorum.
We have a quorum present. Chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the last meeting.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of the last meeting. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Do you want my book?
Yeah.
All the bills are mine, so I'm going to turn over the gavel to Senator Bradford.
Boy, this is going to be good. All right, we'll come to order and take House Bill 1148. And are there any proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason Gant, Senator Sioux Falls. House Bill 1148 is a straightforward and effective bill that ensures quality among our city engineers. The bill changes the qualifications of a city engineer from being a practical engineer and surveyor to a licensed professional engineer. Practical engineer is a phrase that is not really used in the business world anymore. And further, if the licensed city engineer is not also licensed as a land surveyor, then the city engineer will have to find a licensed individual to delegate the practice of the land surveying. So the reason for that is when individuals are coming out of school, they're not licensed both as a engineer and as a land surveyor. So this will allow the cities to hire a city engineer who is just a licensed engineer, and then if they need land surveyor, they can hire that out. The other changes are pretty much just style and form changes, and I urge your support for this bill, and I think there'll be another proponent.
Thank you. Are there any other proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Municipal League, and this bill does exactly what was just explained. It was a glitch in the law, just old law that has been sitting there for a while and needed to be cleaned up, so that's why we bring it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other proponents? If not, are there any opponents? Perhaps a young man would like to testify. If there are no opponents, we'll open it to questions and or action. Senator T.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yvonne, I'm just wondering how many municipalities employ licensed professional engineers, do you know? Obviously, that's a fairly high standard, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, this bill refers mainly to when no, that's not correct. I think you would probably find that most towns at some time or another need to employ a city engineer, but it may not be a full-time engineer employed by the city. They would use a contracting engineer as the case arose. But in any case, they need to be a licensed professional engineer.
Thank you. Are there any other? Senator Teason, have any more? Any other questions? All right. I'm thinking about this a minute because thought I had a question, but I won't. Okay, is there any action?
Move to pass.
Second. Move to pass and seconded. All those in favor will say aye. No opposed, nay. The secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gillespie?
Aye.
Klocek?
Aye.
Miles?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Keeson?
Aye.
Bradford?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there were yeas, 7.
Move consent.
Second.
Move consent. Seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. bill goes to the floor of consent. We'll move on and take House Bill 1159. Are there any other proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason Gant, Senator Sioux Falls. House Bill 1159. This bill, in its original intent and as hog-housed, still allows local entities to treat contractors fairly, while at the same time allowing contractors to bid at current lower prices, knowing that they can adjust later, meaning that the local entities won't have to pay the higher cost for the length of the contract. They can start with lower prices and adjust if necessary. So this bill primarily deals with things that are hauled. So consider an example of garbage hauling contracts. Naturally, a component of the bid for the contractor is going to be fuel prices. And to make sure they don't get stuck, they would be responsible to bid what would be the higher or the highest fuel costs. So even though gas may be less than $2 a gallon right now, that bidder would reasonably figure that their bid at $4 per gallon or higher, because it is reasonable to estimate we'll see those prices again. So what the city can do then is, if the city opted to use the provisions of this bill, they could establish a procedure to allow the bidder to factor in current prices, knowing that they'd be allowed to adjust at a later date if necessary. The city in this case benefits by paying the higher price only when it is justified and not for the full term of the contract. The bidder benefits by being able to submit a realistic bid, knowing that they are able to adjust mid-contract to account for the higher prices that are beyond their control. The bill makes it clear that the adjustments may not result in increases in profits of the vendor and shall be supported by written justification filed with the purchasing agent of the unit of local government. The bill is permissive legislation and would not require any entity to use this type of bidding. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would encourage your support of House Bill 1159.
Thank you, Senator. Any other proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Municipal League. I would only add to that that this would apply to counties also, and so counties would be able to use the provision of this act. It is permissive, and the reference in the language that is it would only be for materials, supplies, and contracts pursuant to 932.11, which deals with hauling of garbage. And it would not apply to things like construction. It would just be material supplies and that and the garbage hauling. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any other proponents for 1159? If not, are there any opponents? Seeing none, I'll open it to questions and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Senator Chief.
I've got one question for Yvonne, if I can. So my question is, how does this affect budgeting? If I'm budgeting in a city in my department, and I understand that it's optional, we could agree not to do that, but how can a city make a budget without firm bidding? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I think it would probably happen in two ways, and one of the first is that you may build in a little flexibility within the budget that you're working with, and the second way is that these would be often are multi-year contracts, and so then from year to year, as you go through your budget process, you would be able to adjust within your budget to account for changing market conditions that may ensue under this bill.
Senator Keegan, anymore? Senator Klocek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Taylor, markets go up and markets go down. So in this scenario, it would apply. It's more addressing up, but if it's a down, the prices would go down. Would the savings then be passed on to the commissioners or the city councils?
Mr. Chairman. Yes, the provisions of the law would work both ways. If the prices went down, the city would be able to then adjust down.
Okay, and one last question.
Yeah,
go ahead. Thank you. Do you feel this is a bill in any way that jeopardizes our free enterprise system or goes against market conditions or towards socialization?
Mr. Chairman, actually, I think it's a bill that is pretty common sense driven and allows the bidder to be treated more fairly because they're not going to unfairly be eating a cost that's beyond their control in the middle of the contract.
One last little bit.
Yes.
I was looking at the bill, and I know Representative Pitts and Hunt and some people on voted no on the I hate to ask you to give the other side, but why was there some opposition to this?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Frankly, and if you go and listen to the House committee testimony, I just was not able to explain to the satisfaction of especially Representative Pitts exactly how this was going to work. And so I don't think it was strong or strong feelings or heartfelt opposition. It was a bit of a misunderstanding.
I have one question. It says the adjustments may not result in increases in profit of the vendor. That, to me, is a little bit hard to know what profit is. You know, sometimes $1 is a profit, but technically it really may not be. So I wondered how that part of it, I just wondered how that part of it was going to be kept track of.
And I believe that would be taken care of by the written justification because they would have to prove that the price had actually increased and show how much, and that would be something that would be verifiable as you drove past the gas station, for instance. You would be able to say, well, yes, prices have increased by this much and work it in. And I think between having the original bid submitted and then the justification, you would be able to figure out whether or not that was justified.
Yeah. I understand that. Just to follow up, though, is maybe the price of oil went up too, and he had an oil burner, and before he didn't have an oil burner. So I'm just trying to be.
But the written justification, and this would not just be gas. It could be any commodity beyond the price control of the vendor. But he would have to provide written justification for it.
Thank you. Are there any other questions, Senator Klobuchar?
All right, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if the price would go down, the county would have to request them to put this written notification, or would the county just demand that they lower their profit or their...
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Yes, the county or the city would go to the vendor and say, okay, now the prices have lowered, and so we're going to be working this way. Yes.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
So what you're doing is locking in a flat profit at that price, whether up or down.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I believe that would be the case, whereas now the vendor could probably only lose in profit. And so yes, it gives some stability to the vendor, and it also gives some stability to the local entity.
And, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah?
And you don't feel this interferes in the free market at all?
Mr. Chairman, no.
Okay. Thanks.
Is there any other questions? If not, open it to action or discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The one thing to keep in mind is right now, if you were a garbage hauler and you were giving your bid, and last year, or not 6 months ago, gas was $4 or so a gallon, and you were going to bid today for the next year, there's no way you would bid it today at $1.87 or whatever it is down the street, because these are crazy times and you don't know what gas is going to be or diesel fuel is going to be. And I don't know what the price of diesel fuel is, but so
$2.
How many?
$2.
Okay, so $2. And so if I'm this garbage hauler, I'm going to make sure that I'm not going to lose money on this contract that I'm getting with the city or with the county. But the city is going to be stuck because all those vendors are going to be in that same boat thinking, well, I better budget for $3.50 or so a gallon to try and make sure I don't lose money. What this bill will do is allow the city and the vendor to agree that on those issues that fluctuate that much and it's out of both of their control, that every 6 months or every quarter or once a year or whatever it may be, based on what the city decides, they would then be able to adjust that so that A, the taxpayers aren't having to foot the bill, or B, the vendor doesn't have to go into the hole. So I think it's a win-win situation there with both entities on something that neither one of them can control, that no one's getting hurt. So I don't think it's more of a profit issue on that aspect where, I mean, of course I'm going to make a little bit of a profit on my employees and my trucks and that type of thing with picking up the garbage. But on issues that are completely out of my control, it wouldn't be an issue with profit.
Thank you. Senator Kocher, did you have something?
Mr. Chairman, I do think that this, I do plan to support this legislation based on the quality of the testimony by the prime sponsor and the lobbyist and the names of the sponsors on this legislation. But it does sound a little bit like price controls, and I won't say socialism, but a thing towards a fix in the market economy to give some stability. And if the cities and the garbage haulers and those people want to do it, there's such a thing called the stock exchange in Chicago to lock in their fuel prices and those kinds of things, and locking in with the fuel suppliers. And, of course, they're in the same boat, too. They don't know the risk is so great. So I will support this thing, but I just want you to know that Senator Kocher, I think this goes down the path of price controls.
Senator Gant.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is probably out of order, but I just have a quick question for Senator Gant, if I could. It just seems to me, just in discussion, Senator Gant, that this prevents a windfall. I mean, it seems to me that there's not a lot of guys running around bidding garbage contracts. I mean, you have to have, it's kind of a specialty, really. And if the municipality or the county is in somewhat of a captive situation, you could high bid the fuel and perhaps have some justification, and then that creates a potential windfall, does it not?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. And the taxpayers are the ones that are going to get hurt here. Because the vendor, when you're in his shoes, I mean, he doesn't want to lose money either, but he doesn't know what the future market is going to be, so he's going to try and just make sure he stays afloat. And from a city and a government standpoint, you're saving taxpayers' money. So I think it's a win-win there.
Thank you. Senator Gus. Yes.
Very briefly, and I don't want to, I'm no laissez-faire economist. In fact, Econ 101 was far enough for me, but going down this path, I know a lot of garbage haulers that do this, and they're hurting. And a little windfall for them, I mean, a big windfall in the oil industry, of course, was greed, but a little windfall for a garbage hauler once in a while, it keeps them in business. And there are less and less garbage haulers. The margins are tighter and tighter. And it's not just the fuel expense they have to worry about. They have the tires, the transportation costs, the cost of the trucks, the labor cost, so many things that they have not much control on. So I just, you know, as long as we got our eyes wide open going into this thing, what we're doing, I don't want to put any garbage haulers out of business, and then we end up with city garbage hauling, and that's even more expensive than having private enterprise do it, from what I've seen, and it's been more of an issue of cost. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and honorable members of the committee.
Thank you. Senator Teason. Move to pass. Is there a second?
Second.
Senator Gillespie. With that, we'll call a roll and vote yes for the bill and no.
Senator Gillespie?
Aye.
Klocek?
Aye.
Miles?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Bradford?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there are yeas 7.
There, we do not want this to go to the floor on the consent, I don't think so. We'll send it to the floor, do pass. I'm sure Senator Gant will handle this when it comes. Are we going to take House Bill 1234? Okay, House Bill 1234, are there any proponents?
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Mark Kirkaby, District 35, representative from Pennington County. Bringing you for your consideration House Bill One, two, three, four. I think it's kind of appropriate because I am trying to put in a little equality or some stability within our election and or candidate status. The bill specifically is asking for your consideration to reduce the current law that we have in the filing deadline for those state independent candidates. In a nutshell, it's exactly what it is. It would still allow 30 days additional time from what the traditional or the more recognized Republican and Democratic parties, or specifically the candidates within those parties, for their filing deadline. It does, in fact, also with that, I'm taking advantage of that testimony or that additional 30 days from what you all have right now. It also would reduce that time frame that they have right now by 5 weeks. And specifically in addressing the merits of this legislation is we all have, every committee member here has received some support from those independent voters through their various election processes. And I believe this actually is that positive step towards bringing that independent party, those independent candidates, a little step closer into that line of equality. I believe a step towards actually being recognized. One of these days, we certainly will have a bona fide three-party system in the great state of South Dakota. Specifically in addressing those numbers, the independent candidates statewide represent approximately 18% of the voters that we have in the great state of South Dakota. It's an awful large number. Bring it a little closer to home, specifically in my district, District 35 in Rapid City, 23% of my constituents, of my voters in my district, are actively involved or registered and actually participate as independent candidates. There certainly will be some opposition to this bill. My dear friend sitting over my shoulder over here, Secretary Nelson, and will certainly offer some valid testimony that it could be viewed as being unconstitutional if in fact it was challenged. And I think it certainly is a legitimate argument for your consideration. However, I am not trying to sugarcoat that. I do believe that we do have a little difference of opinion on that. This is not a national issue. It's really focused and duressed on the local and that state issue. And the challenge very well will be brought to you for your consideration, but I really honestly believe that the legislation in front of you is focused on trying to support and enhance our system right now. I am not looking to chastise or bring any harm to any other political party that is recognized in the great state of South Dakota. The special provisions that we have seen in the past have been granted, and still allowing an additional full month beyond the traditional filing deadline that the traditional Democratic candidate and the traditional Republican candidate has, does in fact also allow for, and it does come with some minor humor because I do not have a sense of humor, the Senator Tom Dempster exemption is in place. We still would have that full 30 days after that traditional filing deadline to run as a candidate affiliated with the independent party. So that provision is in place there. But Mr. Chairman and members of this committee, it is a very short bill. I can't emphasize enough that I'm not out to cause any harm to anybody. I believe that the focus is positive and it's bringing those candidates more in line so we all can be, hopefully one of these days, recognized equally. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand by in if any questions do come up. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there any other proponents for 1234? Any other proponents? If not, are there any opponents? In our our distinguished Secretary of State is here.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Chris Nelson, Secretary of State, and I will start off by saying for Senator Klochek's benefit, I wish I could say that this bill would cause socialism, but I think that would be a bit of a stretch on my part, so I won't go there. I do want to make two points, however, and one is on the practical aspects of this, and the second is on the legal aspects of this. From a practical perspective, the purpose of a filing deadline for candidates is to give the filing office, be it the Secretary of State or the county auditor, the ability to get that person's name on the ballot for the candidacy in which they're running. That's the purpose of the filing deadline. And there is no reason from a practical perspective why the Secretary of State or county auditors need to have independent candidates filed by the end of April. These are folks that do not go to a primary. They go directly to the general election. We don't begin preparing that ballot until August, and so there's no practical reason why we need to have a filing deadline at the end of April for independent candidates. My second argument is legal, and this is, I believe, the most substantive of what I have to say. I truly believe that if this measure is passed, that it will be found to be unconstitutional. We have a little bit of history with this in South Dakota. In 1999, the legislature moved the independent filing deadline for presidential candidates from August into June. And a gentleman by the name of Ralph Nader decided he wanted to be on our ballot for president in South Dakota, and he failed to meet that deadline and took the state, Secretary of State, to court, federal court, and argued that our June deadline for presidential candidates was unconstitutional. And he was successful in that argument. The state of South Dakota lost, and federal court moved the deadline for presidential candidates back to August. Now, that doesn't affect the deadline for state or other federal candidates. That's what this bill is attempting to do, is move that deadline from June into April. And so this bill is going to affect not only legislative candidates, but also those federal candidates. And frankly, that's where I think any challenge will come, is some candidate for U.S. Senate or U.S. House that feels they're aggrieved by the moving up of this particular deadline. There's a gentleman by the name of Richard Winger, who is, I would consider, probably the preeminent historian in the nation so far as following issues dealing with independent candidates and third parties. And I received some information from him, and I would share this, and I will tell you I've not verified it, but I have absolutely no reason to believe that it's not true. And he tells me that this type of a change for state and federal candidates has already been found to be unconstitutional by federal appellate courts in the First Circuit, Third Circuit, Fourth Circuit, Seventh Circuit, Ninth Circuit, and Eleventh Circuits, and in individual federal district courts in individual states. I would like to spend just a little bit of time, Mr. Chairman, if I might, studying one of the holdings in one of those cases, and that was a case from the state of Maine in 1984, a case by the name of Stoddard versus Quinn. And the state of Maine attempted to move their filing deadline for state and federal candidates from June to April. The holding in that particular case was that the filing deadline for United States Senate candidates, and that's where the challenge occurred, was from a Senate candidate in Maine, violates the First and 14th Amendment. I have no question but what if we pass this, we will find a similar holding here. The court found that the filing deadline requirements are ballot access restrictions, which could limit the field of candidates from which voters may choose, and those restrictions implicate fundamental rights protected by the First Amendment. So we're not just talking about some deadline here. We're talking about the First Amendment and how that is viewed. The court went on to say that laws enacted by major political parties that tend to quell independent candidacies must be scrutinized carefully in order to preserve First Amendment rights of association and voting. I have no doubt, but what if this is examined by a federal court, they're going to say the members of this legislature represent the two major political parties, and therefore we have to scrutinize this change to independence very carefully. In Maine, all party candidates for state offices are nominated by a primary that occurs the second Tuesday in June. Obviously, ours is the first Tuesday in June, but the court went on to say that the change would require independents to have their petitions filed in April, whereas the parties don't do their final nominating until that primary in June. The court's decision referenced a decision by the United States Supreme Court coming out of the state of Ohio, and that case, Anderson versus Celebrez. And in that case, the United States Supreme Court observed both the burdens and benefits of the respective requirements. And by respective requirements, they mean the filing deadline for party candidates versus independent candidates are materially different. And the reasons for requiring early filing for primary candidates are inapplicable to independent candidates in the general election. And my friend Representative Kirkaby has talked about this as being an equality bill. Well, the United States Supreme Court has said, in this instance, this is not equality that we are looking for because we have to treat these different. They're different creatures. The court went on to say that the states, meaning the state of Maine, of course, Maine was trying to defend this change to an April filing deadline. The states claim that the early filing deadline is justified by a state interest in equal treatment of all candidates, and that's what we've heard, suffers from the same defect as a similar claim made by the state of Ohio in the Anderson case. Equality is not achieved by applying the same deadline to substantially different types of candidacies. The Supreme Court observed, sometimes the grossest discrimination can lie in treating things that are different as though they were exactly alike. The final holding in the case is that the deadline for filing nominating petitions and consent forms on behalf of independent candidates was unconstitutional, null, and void. And ladies and gentlemen, I have no doubt that if we pass this bill, that the state of South Dakota will be sued over this particular deadline by some independent candidate at some point. We will go to federal court. We will attempt to defend that in the face of overriding precedent running against us, and that we will probably lose that case. And in losing, we will also have to pay the attorney fees for the plaintiff attorneys. And ladies and gentlemen, I would ask that you would oppose this bill for the reasons that I have mentioned. Mr. Chairman, be happy to answer questions when appropriate.
Thank you, Secretary Nils. Are there any other opponents? Seeing none, I'll open the committee questions or action. Are there any questions? Oh, yes, I should give. Representative Kirkby, would you like a rebuttal?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly will be brief. The same very articulate arguments that the Secretary of State presented for you are exactly the reasons that I'm bringing this bill. The testimony that was given that there was indeed a challenge 25 years ago. Times are changing, and I cannot emphasize enough. I am comfortable in repeatedly offering the testimony on equality. Times are, in fact, are changing. The testimony that was given that there's no doubt that this will be challenged someday. My argument, more factual, I have no doubt that the sun will also rise tomorrow, and I also have no doubt in my mind whatsoever that someday, in the great state of South Dakota, the independent party will in fact be a recognized party that will have to abide by all the standard provisions that we currently have in statute. And I believe this piece of legislation is offering them some support to give them that additional step of recognition that they need. And again, Mr. Chairman, it's just an honor to present this bill to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, are there any other questions? Senator Teason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if, in fact, your prediction comes true and the independent party, independents become a party of equal standing to the Republicans and Democrats, to the extent that they have multiple candidates running for the general election ballot, then wouldn't those candidates fight it out in a primary in first week of June just like the rest of us?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that would be 100% accurate, yes.
So then you're losing me here then. What do we accomplish by moving this filing date back to April?
Mr. Chairman, if I could, it is allowing them that progressive step into actually being recognized, specifically Senator Thiessen, with that previous statement that you have. Right now, they are treated as a special, unique class of not only citizens, but more specifically voters and or candidates. And personally, I think with the increased numbers that they have, they certainly are gaining that status, and I believe this legislation is going to help them be more recognized and more formally have to participate with all the rules and the challenges that any other candidate has in South Dakota.
Senator Thiessen, do you have any more? Senator Klobuchar.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman.
It must be for the Secretary of State, then.
Okay. Well, he can maybe clean up this. You're moving it back from June until April. You're not later than the first Tuesday after the first Monday in June to the last Tuesday in April. My question would be, wouldn't that make it, it would make it tougher on the independent candidates to get their name on the ballot, would it not? That's my first question.
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond to that, I guess they're, as far as tougher, I guess anybody could argue that, Senator Klobuchar. They still have the ability, just like any other candidate, to pick up their petitions just as legally prescribed in state statute right now after the 1st of January. Their numbers certainly are a little bit more than the traditional Republican or Democratic candidate, but they still would be allowed a full 30 days after we are required to have our petitions filed.
Well, question. And in the spirit of Bill Napoli, Paul Simmons, Frank Klobuchar, and others who've had the constitutional issue used against them on good legislation, can you address the constitutionality issue at all? What your feeling is on whether it's constitutional or not directly? We've heard a lot of good comments from the Secretary of State on that issue and why you think it's not unconstitutional?
If I could, Mr. Chairman, Senator Klobuchar, it's a very important question, and I honestly appreciate it. I think that if I had the legal experience like some of the members of this body, I very well might be still uncomfortable in answering that. If I did, in fact, have a legal mind, I would have a formal presentation put forth for your review. But just the personal comfort level that I have just being a humble servant of the citizens of District 35, that there are so many actions and bills and policies and procedures that we initiate here at 500 East Capitol that still have that identical challenge.
Is there any other questions? If not,
yes. A question for Secretary Nelson.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Secretary, I guess my question pertains to the thought that so much time has passed from these cases, and I'm not familiar with the cases that you've recited from our federal district courts and from the federal circuits. However, have you seen in any of those opinions or in any of the work that you've done on this issue the argument that independents are growing and perhaps they're on the same par as Democrat and Republican candidates and general political parties as we know them? Have you seen that argument come up, and has the federal courts addressed that issue?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, if I might respond to that. Beyond the references to these other cases, I've probably looked at maybe 8 or 10 cases. The one that I recited to you today was the most on point with the issue that we're dealing with here today. I've not seen that particular issue referenced, but let me be very clear. Independents are not a political party, nor are they seeking to become a political party. The number of people that are registering as independents is certainly increasing, has been since 1992, and I don't see that stopping. But these are people that are not seeking to be part of an independent party. They are people saying, I do not want to be registered with a party. And so going to some of the earlier questioning, I don't see this move towards forming any kind of an independent party. That's not in the cards. Independent candidates are not seeking to be part of a party system, but rather they are filed as a separate class of candidates that do not go through and are not seeking to go through any kind of party primary.
Senator Gillespie. Secretary Nelson, I have a question. Since you mentioned this in talking about our national candidates, I'm wondering, is this like, perhaps I'm coming because I was involved in the lawsuit, as you know, mm-hmm. over the other redistricting and those kinds of things. Would this have to be viewed by the Justice Department at all?
If I might respond to that, yeah, the answer to that is absolutely yes. Every piece of legislation that affects the election process that is passed by this legislature will have to be sent to the Department of Justice for preclearance before we can implement it in Todd and Shannon County. And this would certainly be part of that. And it would be our burden to make the argument to the Department of Justice that this bill in no way retrogressed the voting rights of Native Americans in Todd and Shannon County. That's our burden.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Not. Thank you.
Thank you.
Secretary Nelson. I'll open it to discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Senator Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, before I kick the bucket, right now, as if you wanted to be a legislator and you were a Republican or a Democrat, you could start taking petitions. I believe it's on the 1st of January, and you would have until the end of March. You'd have until the end of March to get those in, if you're a Republican or Democrat, and it would be based on how many votes in the past governor's election. I think I had to get 50 signatures. Maybe others had to get a different amount of signatures. Then if you were to run as an independent, right now you would get all the way until that first Tuesday after the first Monday in June to get your signatures. And granted, they do have to get a few more signatures, but I don't see how it's necessary for us to give them that much time to get their petitions in when we have less of a time to get our petitions in. And I think this would help clear up who is going to be running in the elections. It seems kind of unfair that the independent candidates have different rules than what we do, than what a Republican candidate or a Democratic candidate has. And I think this is a good step in moving towards putting all the candidates who are going to be on the ballot on the same page.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Senator Kochet.
I just had a concern. Would this have limited Senator Dempster from running as an independent in any way? Or if a person missed the deadline? Can I just ask that of Chris? Is that okay, or is it too late?
Did you want to ask?
Can I ask?
Secretary Nelson.
Would this have jeopardized, say, a legislator, or just limited the time he had to put in? It would have limited the time he had to put in as an independent, would it not?
If I might, as Representative Kirkaby has already testified, with this change, somebody who misses the partisan deadline would still have about 30 days, yeah, about 1 month to file. My concern would be, in Senator Dempster's case, I mean, he had to make a couple decisions. Do I sue the secretary over my initial petitions? Do I try to get that through the court process? And if I lose, then do I turn around and try to file as an independent? And the chances of doing all that in 30 days, I think, are very, very slim, whereas currently you've got a little over 2 months to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to discuss a little bit, and I'm very much, you know, as most of you know, I had a bill here to allow these people to vote in our primaries, and it failed. And to me, that would have been much more important than this, but I can see where maybe what we're trying to do here is I don't know, somehow I feel we're trying to tweak something, and I don't know how important moving that back 30 days or you know, it's, and chancing the fact that we could end up in a lawsuit. And I do know that these types of things can happen, and they can cost us lots and lots of money. And whether it's really, I have a deep wondering if it's really, really necessary. So I probably will vote against this, but I'm going to open it now to action. Senator Teason.
Just a couple of comments. First one would be really, I guess, what in our minds, what's fair. I mean, I understand what Senator Gant says, that that we that are in political parties have to start early, we have to declare early, well ahead of the independent candidate. On the other hand, as the process works out, it's on the Tuesday in June of the primary that all the candidates for the general election become known. Some of us, as a result of winning our primaries, the independents as a result of filing their petition on that day. So it's like, I mean, I presume that's what the federal court is looking at. As far as the November election is, we're all standing at the starting line getting the green flag on that Tuesday in June on primary day. And that apparently the federal courts have an idea that that's what's fair, making that the deadline for everybody to, you know, be declared, and that's who's going to be in the general election in November. Anyway, that aside, I kind of agree with Senator Bradford that there does appear to be significant information that would suggest that we at the very least would have a court battle on our hands, and quite possibly could be a loser in that if we're to take decisions that were made a couple of decades ago to be continuing today. And I tend to agree that I'm not sure it's worth that risk and worth that fight and worth that expense. I have to admit that there's probably some place in here, some sort of political strategy, but I'm enough of a rookie at that business that I'm not, can't quite figure out what, you know, what strategies what might work to your advantage or disadvantage as to knowing who your opponents are and when they're known and all that sort of thing. But it just seems to me that the risk of fighting this battle is not worth a month's difference in the filing date. Thank you.
Are there any other comments? I'm open to action.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So I would move to pass.
Is there a second? I'm open to any other motions? And, I would, somebody introduce a motion of any kind here, please. Well, I will move to the 41st day. Is there a second? That's going to die for lack of a second, too. Second? You second? Okay. We have a second. With that, we'll call the roll.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank Representative Kirkaby for bringing the bill forward, and thank Secretary Nelson for his testimony. I have not heard a compelling reason to move this date up, and there's no compelling reason to make South Dakota the test case on this issue. It's from the information provided by Secretary Nelson, we'd be facing strict scrutiny, which is the highest scrutiny that the statute would have to face in terms of a constitutional challenge. And we can't afford it, and there's no compelling reason to do it, so I'm going to support the 41st day motion.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? Senator Klochek.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I do commend Representative Kirkby, and Secretary of State wouldn't be just pulling our chain to kill a bill here. He's done his homework, and I agree wholeheartedly with Senator Gillespie. Right now, there's some compelling disadvantages. You can withdraw as a Republican or Democratic candidate, and we had it happen in our district this year, and the other side didn't. August 7th, they didn't know who their candidate was until August, 7th, I believe. Isn't that the date? So, I mean, those candidates were at a distinct disadvantage. They had no idea, but on the other side, the other candidate had to be, you know. So there is some games being played on that issue. The other issue, the constitutionality, I think is very clear. And I do commend the good Senate representative from Rapid City. We just need to, you know, let those candidates have a little more time and work it that way. So I'd be at this time against it. But certainly we're open to some type of legislation next year that would be a little in line with the constitutionality issue. And I've been in court on the constitutionality issue, and it is exciting. And we did win, and it was awesome. And I would do it again in a heartbeat. If I thought this had any chance at all, I would testify for you in the federal court. It's an experience of a lifetime. You sweat like bullets, but in the end, it was well worth it. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Klochek. And I would like to say that my heart goes out to Representative Kirkaby. I've been there, done that. Secretary Nelson has killed many of my bills, so join the club. And at this time, I will ask the secretary to call the roll, and to A means to go to the 41st day, and nay means to not.
Senator Gillespie?
Aye.
Klochek? Miles?
Aye.
Schmidt? Teason?
Aye.
Bradford?
Aye.
Gant?
Nope.
Mr. Chair, there are yeas 6, nays 1.
So, House Bill 1234 on to the 41st day. Thank you. And I will turn the gavel back to the. Also, thanks for allowing me to use your book, Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Bradford. Seeing nothing more to come before the committee, the chair would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Been moved and second to adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. We are adjourned.